American media is a business, and it has a mission. Not to inform Americans, but to entertain them.
You know, there's happy news for happy people with happy problems.
And the business leaders said that they had to renew with vigor what they called the everlasting battle for the minds of men and indoctrinate citizens with the capitalist story.
Global corporations feeding us the news as they see fit.
Truth is subversive. It's anti-American.
Americans have computers in school, dozens of TV stations, and the most aggressive news media on Earth. Does that mean they're better informed? Hardly.
And now, for Newsreel, here's Sean Kennedy.
And it is a good day! This is Sean Kennedy reporting to you from the Internet for Monday, September 3rd, 2007. And that's right, you are listening to Newsreel, the WOG Global Sit Rep on Core Political Tyranny, Technology, and Trends for your headspace and timing. Rant Media is taking a stand for free speech today. Just by listening and distributing this program, you are as well. And you can follow up with all of these news stories and check my facts by going to my live journal. And you can get to my live journal as well as follow along with all the great things that are happening in my life by going to sean_kennedy.livejournal.com. This can be a free podcast. Well, it should be only a free podcast, because that's how we intend it to be. It's supposed to be free. You're supposed to be able to hand this out to people. It's supposed to be something that you can enjoy, pass the time in the car, keep you a week long-haul trucking, keep you a week. Part of also this method of listening to this broadcast is to just sort of understand what I'm trying to say. You know, I kind of, people who listen to Newsreel develop psychic powers. It's true. And with their psychic powers, they realize, of course, that this is a podcast that can be heard on RAN Radio, SRN1, Wild Bunch Radio, WNY Media Network, Pure KJAG Radio, and Pure Rock Radio, as well as anywhere where freedom rings true out to the masses of the world. Hopefully overseas somewhere. It'd be interesting if any soldiers get this. I'd like to know if there's anybody deployed who happens to listen to the show. I know that there's a few people who are listening to Tales from the After Now and things of that nature. I know that a couple of the book, copies of the book, Scab Wings of Abaddon, have made their way overseas. Very, very cool. So, you know, if anybody's out there has got to, you know, is listening to me while deployed, which I'm sure there's a, I know there's a bunch of Navy guys who do. So, hey, out there to all you guys, please don't get dead. We don't like dead fans. Dead fans are not cool. As a matter of fact, don't even get maimed. Don't get hurt at all, because, well, we love you guys. Anyway, let's get into some feedback. Got this email. Hey, Sean. Just found something I bet you'd love to have, and it looks like it belongs in the After Now universe. A lightweight rope ascender that can pull a fully loaded soldier up a rappelling line at 10 feet per second. Can't buy one yet, but Hackaday, if you go to Hackaday.com, they got them. Right now, they're in the middle of doing a short production run and will be evaluated by the military. Very cool devices. Very, very cool. We got that more on that later in the Cyberpunk issue, because it is an amazing device. But anyway, on the matter of complaints, because we do. We get a lot of complaints. We've had some problems lately trying to get the show up and archives and everything else like that. And Plasmonic Grid was a big, cool guy and stepped forward 45 minutes after I made a post. Bang, server provided. And, yeah, we got the pipe up there. We're good to go. We're able to get people the show as they need it. Hopefully, we won't have to keep doing these kind of a thing. But it doesn't really matter. What does matter is that, you know, the information is getting out there. And it kind of keeps, you know, there's something to be said. There's something to be said for a show where it's not super-duper professional all the time. Like, you know, it's like when you walk into a store and you want to go buy something and you want to just deal with a person, you know? You don't want to have some dude coming up and, like, totally trying to sell you everything, and he's got everything all rehearsed, he knows every single sales approach, you know, and he's like, hi there. Well, yeah, I just like to buy, oh, I know, and you know that this guy's got his verbal kung fu training and everything, and you just kind of get this feeling like you're going to get screwed over just by even talking to the guy. I know what I'm talking about. And sometimes you can get that feeling from media, too. It's like you'll want to go and you want to learn something by watching a show. You know there's going to be a show coming on, say a documentary, on whatever. And you can get a vibe for how biased or unbiased the documentary is just by, you know, kind of watching how they present everything and their methodology and everything. It's kind of like there's a great book written about this where it talks about your ability to make snap judgments about things with very little data being brought in. It's like hunches, how hunches work and all that kind of stuff. It's a book called Blink, The Art of Thinking Without Thinking. I just listened to an audiobook version of it. Very, very cool book. Very, very cool book, and it talks a lot about judgment. And it's a big argument for why getting experience is a good idea, because, I mean, with experience, you're able totally, you know, make snap decisions. You have more, resources to draw upon, essentially, is what I'm talking about here. But anyways, that's a little bit of recommended media. But never mind any of that. Sorry about the problems with the show. We got to sort it out now. I'm making my standard pitch to make sure you guys all understand that. Well, yes, yet more proof that this is, in fact, a basement program. In replicant news, for replicants, for the people who don't know what replicants are, I'm trying to get more and more cyberpunk stories, anything that's kind of cyberpunk. And, you know, it's frightening to me that a lot of people don't even know what cyberpunk is. You know, like, they don't, you say cyberpunk to somebody and they don't know what it is. There's steampunk. Steampunk is a derivative of cyberpunk. The cyberpunk term, the word steampunk would never have been thrown together if the word cyberpunk wasn't out there. And I know I'm going to be pissing people off. There's going to be guys saying, no, Sean, that's not true. But in actuality, it is true. But anyway, replicants were the names of the synthetically created people that were put in the film Blade Runner. Very, very cool. And for those of you who haven't seen the film Soldier, it's actually Blade Runner Part 2 because they make references. And if you listen to the director's track. But anyway, that's a good stack. If you haven't seen Soldier and you haven't seen Blade Runner, you want to stack those two movies together. You know, open with Blade Runner, finish with Soldier. It's good fun. And they're both good movies. I own one of them. Well, I want to get the one where it's not the director's cut. I like the one where Harrison Ford is narrating. Because if I could get a copy of that, I could rip all the sound bites off. And, well, you know, honestly, the sound bites are where it's at for those kinds of films, especially if, you know, you're doing some kind of an audio program. But anyway, I digress. In replicant news, on July 27th, scientists in Japan have created a womb for incubating artificially fertilized eggs in the earliest days, helping them grow nearly as fast as they would in the uterus. So we're talking about creating life without any kind of, body here. Kind of interesting. Currently, test tube human embryos are kept in micro droplets, a mixture of mineral oil and culture fluid to keep them from drying out. But the lags of the superior conditions provided by the womb and artificially fertilized embryos tend to grow a lot slower in micro droplets compared to the naturally conceived embryos. Well, yeah. This is not ideal because larger, faster-growing embryos are believed to stand a better chance of survival after being reinserted back into the mother's womb. So, you know, this is, I guess, part of the whole, like, you know, getting you pregnant. In the latest issue of New Scientist magazine, researchers in Japan said that they have devised a chip measuring 2 millimeters across and 0.5 millimeters high, small chip, which they said simulates more closely the conditions of a natural womb. Fresh IVF embryos are slipped into the chips, which they rest on a membrane of cultured uterus cells. Once they are ready to attach themselves to the uterus wall, the eggs are reinserted into the mother's womb. Now, I would wonder, you know, if we can start to be able to synthetically create all of this stuff, right? If you're able to synthetically create the eggs and the sperm and totally, you know, just genetically manipulate the whole deal, would it not be possible to just genetically create people? Like, you know, you grow these people straight out and you wind up with slaves, sex slavery, you could have labor slavery, you could have some, you know, we could create a culture of wetware robots in which we, beat and mutilate and, you know, generally do nasty human things to. That's coming down the road. I wonder what kind of checks and balances are in place to prevent that. You know what I mean? Because, we're not really too nice to our equipment. And if we dehumanize something like a machine, like some of us like to humanize things, we like to think of, you know, robots as people. We like to think that maybe robots one day would have rights. We'd like to think that maybe one day robots would be able to, be friends with us. We could actually have a meaningful, you know, sort of relationship with a robot. Some people want that. I give you Real Doll. Thanks for calling. Thank you for calling. You check out the Real Doll sites. The guys who invented that stuff, I guarantee the people, Real Doll, for those of you, which I'm sure everybody does, but for those of you who don't know, Real Doll makes, adult entertainment sex dolls, is what they do. And they're very, very expensive. They're like $5,000 a piece, U.S. And you think, what kind of a psycho would pay $5,000 for this doll? Well, people do. People buy more than one of them. People buy like 13, 14 of them. It's really bizarre. And, you can find all kinds of video about it. I don't know how I feel about it. I really don't. On one hand, I guess, hey, you know, who am I to judge? On the other hand, I think that at some point you really need to, like, you know, take a step back and consider your position in the universe. But, if you could suddenly have people start buying their very own, you know, genetically programmed, self-made sex toys, I mean, that opens a whole new bivouac, don't you think? Also in replicant news, more replicant news here. Around the world, a handful of scientists are trying to create life from scratch, and they're getting closer. Now, this is interesting. Experts expect an announcement within 3 to 10 years from someone in the little-known field of wet artificial life. Very replicant. It's going to be a big deal, and everybody's going to want to know about it, said Mark Bidow, chief operating officer of Protolife of Venice, Italy, one of those in the race. We're talking about a technology that could change our world in pretty fundamental ways. In fact, in ways that are impossible to predict. The first cell of synthetic life made from the basic chemicals of DNA may not seem like much to non-scientists. For one thing, you have to look through a microscope to see it. Creating protocells has the potential to shed a new light on our place in the universe, Bidow said. This will remove one of the few fundamental mysteries about the creation of the universe and our role. I love these scientists who are on the bleeding edge of this stuff. Eh? They think that their work is the most important thing known, and they're trying to like downplay it. But this will remove one of the few fundamental mysteries about creation in the universe and our role. You know, I mean, well, I doubt that. But, you know, I mean, there's still people going to be wondering, blah, blah, blah. But, you know, I mean, he's into his stuff. And several scientists believe man-made life forms will one day offer the potential for solving a variety of problems, from fighting diseases to locking up greenhouse gases to eating toxic waste. And slavery. No, they didn't say that. They did say. Benham figures at about 300 hurdles. There are three, oh, pardon me, Bidow figures there are three major hurdles to creating synthetic life. Just three. A good container, a genetic system that controls the function of the cell, and a metabolism that it extracts raw materials from the environment, food, and changes energy. That's it. Once you get those three, you basically got it beat. You got her licked if you got those three. One of the leaders in the field, Jack Skozak of the Harvard Medical School, predicts within the next 6 months, scientists will report evidence that the first step, creating a cell membrane, is not a big problem. Scientists are using fatty acids in that effort. Not a problem, we can do that. Stotzik is also optimistic about the next step, getting nucleotides, the building blocks of DNA, a form of working energy system. His idea that once the container is made, if scientists add nucleotide to the right proportions, the Darwinian evolution could simply take over. You know, we're smart enough to design things. We just let evolution do the hard work and we figure out what happened. Now, there's a quote about science, eh? We aren't smart enough to design things. We just let evolution do the hard work and then we figure out what happened. Yeah, there's lots of stuff in science they've done with that. You know, like nuclear bombs, you know, chem weapons. We'll just let Darwinian physics take over. I don't know, you know. Sometimes I look at the things that science makes and I go, wow, that's amazing. That's fantastic. Well, boy, isn't science wonderful. Who doesn't love science? But other times you come across some of the stuff that science, you know, they build this stuff and you go, why did you make that? You know, like, I guess you don't want to be a Luddite. You don't want to be one of these people who, you know, tries to call down what science does. But sometimes you just sort of look at it and go, what the hell were you thinking? Really? You know, and in consciousness news, talk about thinking. Check this out. In consciousness news, we've got some concepts redefining the concept of free will. Now, free will is subject to a little bit of argument all on its own, okay? Because free will is, people are programmed. You take a guy, you put him in a room, you show him nothing but, pop commercials, pop, 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 pop commercials. You let him out of the room. And you say, make a choice. You can either have a can of the advertised pop, or you can have a glass of water. Well, obviously, you are going to be getting the glass, you're going to drink the pop, right? And some people would argue, well, no, I'd resist it, blah, blah, blah. But the point is that people's opinion can be manipulated. It's very easy to do. But anyway, the concept of free will, if you wanted to redefine it, only a Nobel laureate would have the nerve. Last year, a Dutch physicist, Gerard Te Hooft, I'm not kidding, that's how it's Te Hooft, announced that the weird effects that spring from quantum mechanics, oh good, there's quantum mechanics in, arise from a deeper deterministic reality based on classical physics. People objected that his theory appeared to rob us of free will, and now Te Hooft has responded by removing the goalposts. No, we don't have free will, as it is commonly understood, he said, but that's because the way it is commonly understood is wrong. Okay, that's pretty ballsy. You know, when you get to this level and the math guys are like, no, you don't have free will. You know, it's like, listen, dude, you know, you need to, like, comb your hair, really. De Hooft of the University of Utrecht in the Netherlands shared a Nobel Prize in 1999 for laying the mathematical foundation for the standard rules of particle physics. Like Einstein, he was troubled by the indeterminism of the heart of quantum mechanics, according to which particles do not have clearly defined properties before you measure them. However, you can never predict with certainty what the outcomes of the measurements will be. So De Hooft constructed a deterministic alternative which showed that fundamental states, which exist in the small scales, do start out with clearly defined properties. Information about these states gets blurred over time until we no longer are able to tell how they initially arose, leading them to apparently problematic quantum nature, he says. Now, quantum mechanics is one of those kind of things that I look at that and I go, wow, you know, nobody's really smart enough to understand what the fuck you're talking about. So, you know, can you make a toaster with this? When do I get my quantum toaster? That's what I want. I want a quantum toaster. I want a toaster that makes toast, you know, before I actually press the thing down. Or maybe just a toaster like, you know, you could have Schrodinger's toaster where, you know, when I have the toaster is down, we don't know if it's a bread or a toaster. For a limited period of time, I have both bread and toast at the same time. So, you know, if you could have it work that way, you could have eventually the toast would pop and you'd have twice as much toast and bread and you could feed the kids in Africa. I don't know. Something you could do with quantum physics that actually, you know, does something. You know, I mean, because I've yet to see a role of quantum mechanics that actually does something. Like, what does it do? You know, you come to me with aerospace engineering, I'm like, what do you do? Oh, we make flying stuff. Oh, cool. All right, well, flying stuff's cool. Quantum mechanics guy, what do you do? We have bad hair, and we burn out a lot of chalk, and we sit around and we get philosophical about math. That's generally where we're at. In Batman's Weapon Hallucinogens news. Now, this is something that I saw, and I've thought about this before, and anyone who knows me is going to, like, totally just balk at this. But apparently, paintballs are being laced with mind-altering drugs and drug-spraying robots. Sound like something from the Joker rather than the Marine Corps, but these are two of new promising new methods for administering non-lethal chemical weapons. Sorry, they're not non-lethal chemical weapons. They're called calmatives. They're calmatives, not combatives, they're calmatives. We're going to get you stoned. Being developed by the Pentagon, according to the latest report from the Bradford Non-Lethal Weapons Research Project. Non-lethal weapons. So we're not going to drug you. We're not going to use chem weapons on you. No, we're using calmatives. It's calmatives. Initial experiments with the sort of darts used to tranquilize animals were unsuccessful because it killed you. Because you take these massive dosages and you would die. But it would also be possible to get a drug through the skin via a more subtle approach using the solvent DMSO. Hence, the old punk song, I like swabbing cop doors with DMSO and LSD. They draw their inspiration from a drug's skin patches. Bullshit, they drew their inspiration from punk music. For example, nicotine patches for nicotine withdrawal, phenylalanine patches for severe burns when the drug is combined with a solvent to delivery through the skin, which is called transdermal. Transdermal. Subsequently, they tested a delivery system concept comprising of a felt pad soaked with DMSO, fired from an air rifle at 7,000 feet per second. The pad went right through the guy. They found that the drug DMSO mixture could be delivered in this way, and the material would penetrate clothing, but thick clothing would be a sufficient countermeasure. You know, why don't they just say, yeah, if you're not wearing too many clothes, you know, but they got to countermeasures. However, they proposed that future developments would consider a smaller, fully encapsulated paintball-type projectile containing the drug and solvent mixture. There are already two non-lethal paintball weapons. The pepper ball, which I've heard of, okay, which fires a pepper spray instead of a paintball, and the FN-303, or Individual Serviceman Non-Lethal System, used by the U.S. Army, which uses this type of ammo. The bullet, which is essentially a really, really elaborate paintball gun where you can, you know, pretty much do whatever you want with the ammo. The report also mentions the idea of a drug-filled rubber bullet, much like the laughing bullets described recently. Laughing bullets. Laughing bullets and comatives, the new face of repression. For larger targets, such as the crowd, there are a number of new projects under development for carrying out chemical agents. Sorry, comatives, including the 81mm mortar and 155mm howitzer round. Yes, we're going to shell you with commatives, because nothing says peace and serenity like artillery fire. But if firing an artillery into the city might be excessive... Now, this is America. Before 9/11, that would be excessive, but we're living in a post-9/11 world. Fuck yeah, we gotta have the ability to call in fire. Bring me the foo. Those people in the park are pissing me off. How about using an unmanned air vehicle? I mean, really, the methods for delivering chemical commatives to, you know, the masses. I think they're probably going to like completely drop the ball on this one, because who goes to these protests where they're going to be using commatives on them? Protesters, right? And what do the protesters do? Drugs. Protesters do drugs. So we all know that. So if we know that, and the protesters, you're going to start hitting them with commatives. Do you think that's really going to affect them? I mean, seriously, these protesters inside of the first four encounters are going to figure out, hey, man, they're spraying us with some pretty wicked dope. They're going to be like down there. I mean, wow, you're going to have the biggest protest numbers ever. Maybe that could be good. Maybe we could, like, you know, back spray. We could get everybody like dancing, set up some, you know, strobe lights and a couple of whistles. It'd be all right. You know, we could maybe bring peace to the entire situation, set up some DJ booths. A computer-controlled, unmanned, powered parafoil. This is using the unmanned aerial vehicle. A computer-controlled unmanned parafoil, which is essentially a parachute with a propeller on it, equipped with a payload that dispenses a liquid spray while in flight, developed for the Marine Corps' non-lethal directorate system, is intended to provide non-lethal crowd control options for the U.S. military. So these things fly over the crowd and spray you with chem weapons, commatives. A bit like Saddam's drone-based anthrax air force, but it leaves you stoned rather than dying. Now, this technology is, talk about a Pandora's box. This is some scary, scary tech. I cannot believe that they're talking openly about the idea of non-lethal weapons, because, you see, this is a double-edged sword. The cops go, well, it's non-lethal, right? So, you know, it's not really that bad. Well, what if the protesters start using non-lethal weapons on cops? I'm not encouraging that. I'm just saying, what if they do that? Because, you see, protesters, even the most savage peace freak, is going to be like, well, I don't want to hurt anybody. So if you kind of make it that these non-lethal weapons are sort of okay, we're not really hurting anybody. We're just kind of calming them. And then you get the protesters, you wind up with chemical wars happening at these protests, you know, where you have return fire, where you're getting cops stoned on, like, some pretty heavy stuff. Because, you know, I mean, this is a very, very dangerous piece of technology. Just be describing how it's done and everything. I don't know. I mean, there's a certain advantage to having, you know, we got to know about it. We got to know what's happening. But I guess, you know, wearing heavy clothing and gas masks is probably going to start to be a little bit more required for protesters, I suppose, because this is where they're going with it. And, of course, where else would you want to go if you're going to be bombed with commatives, round up and thrown inside the cattle cars, but into the concentration camps? Which brings us to concentration camp news. Yes, the government's terrorist screening database flagged Americans and foreigners as suspected terrorists almost 20,000 times last year. But only a small fraction of those questions were arrested or denied entry to the United States, raising concerns among critics about the privacy of the list's effectiveness. A range of state and local federal agencies, as well as U.S. embassies overseas, rely on the database to pinpoint terrorism suspects who can be identified at borders or even during routine traffic stops. Routine traffic stops, and your name goes into a database. The database consolidates dozens of government watch lists, as well as a growing amount of information from various sources, including airline passenger data. The government said it was planning to expand the data sharing to the private sector groups with a substantial bearing on homeland security. So Walmart would be able to just look all that stuff up, know where you travel, and can make an accurate prediction for the demographic of their advertising. And all for a premium, of course. Few specifics are known about how the system operates. Few specifics are known. But many people are detained or turned back at the borders. The criteria, how many people are detained or turned back from borders, that's not talked about either. Or the criteria that they use to identify whether or not you're a suspect. But chances are, if you go to peace rallies, you're probably going to be considered a terrorism suspect, and we don't want you in the country. Thanks for calling. The government will not discuss cases, nor will it confirm whether the individual's name is on the list. So basically, The LISC is totally in the dark. You don't know who's on it. You don't know shit about the LISC. You don't know nothing. You don't need to know. Screw you. Who are you? Your name is now on the LISC. Slightly more than half of the 20,000 encounters last year were logged by Customs and Border Patrol officers who turned back or handed over to the authorities 550 people. So out of 20 grand, they got 550 people, most of them foreigners. Most of them were foreigners, but a lot of them were domestic people, too. Customs officials said, FBI and other officials said that they could not provide the data on the number of people they arrested, detained, or in this database. So essentially, Customs said they got 550 out of it, people out of it, but everybody else who had a badge went, no, we don't have a LISC. Fuck off. Who are you? Your name's going on a LISC. The government says the database is a powerful tool for identifying and tracking suspected terrorists, for sharing intelligence, and that its purpose is not necessarily to make arrests. So what is it for? But the new details about the numbers disclosed in an FBI budget documented documents and in an interview raises questions about the database's effectiveness and its impact on privacy, critics said. They argued the number of hits relative to arrests was alarmingly high and indicated that a threshold for including someone in the watch list was too low, potentially violating thousands of American civil liberties when they're stopped. Well, who cares? Who cares if their civil liberties are violated? Who cares? I mean, we got artillery lobbing commies into the city, you know? Sure, civil liberties meant something before 9/11, but I'll tell you, 9/11 was significant because never before in the history of the world has a building fell down due to fire. You know, it's a sign from God. David Sobel, senior consultant with the Electronic Frontier Foundation, privacy organization. If you don't know who they are, you should find out who they are and give them some money. Said the numbers suggest a very staggeringly high rate of false positives with respect to identification of supposed terrorists. A staggeringly high rate. He added that this really confirms the longstanding fear that the LISC is inaccurate and ultimately ineffective as an anti-terrorism tool. However, I bet it's damn effective as sort of an inconvenience tool which could be used by, you know, different groups, want to promote some kind of an agenda, if they want to make people's lives difficult. I don't think that LISC is really about terrorism, but I think it's probably more about just being inconvenience, being able to, enforce WHIM laws, which is a big draw. A lot of people want that. J.P. Anderson, Deputy Commissioner of the U.S. Customs Border Protection, said, focusing on arrests misses a much larger universe of suspicions of U.S. citizens. Well, I don't know. You know, I mean, if they focus on just having, you know, this pool of names they can just draw, and that sort of freaks me out. Now, we were talking about we've got the terrorism watch list. We know that we're slowly turning into a massive surveillance nation. One of the problems with surveillance, of course, is going to be, you know, the aspect of space. Because in Britain, well, it's not that hard because, well, it's a place that the whole country is the size of, you know, Vancouver Island. So it's kind of big, you know, America comparatively. But now, thankfully, you know, with this pesky war, we want to be able to automate that kind of stuff. So I got a report sent to me, which I'm going to be talking about, regarding the new robots at the DARPA Tech show, which just happened recently here. DARPA Tech 2007. Now, you may have heard about things like Big Dog. The DARPA Tech 2007 is crawling with robots. Stanford's University Grand Challenge winner Stanley squats in the lobby of the Marriott Anaheim. The first thing you see upon walking into the exhibit hall is the Big Dog, the four-legged robotic jogger from Boston Dynamics. There's all kinds of videos of this guy. You've probably seen it. I've posted it on my live journal before. It's this thing with four legs that goes and then stomps around all over the place. It runs over. It's loud as hell. There's no way this thing could sneak up on anybody anywhere. It's essentially a pack animal that they want the infantry to throw equipment on so that they can carry it. Fair ball, okay? Anything that decreases the load for the ground troops is pretty okay for me. It's designed to be a walking robot as long as, you know, you've got enough troops with it, because I'm here to tell you, that thing is so goddamn loud that you'd hear that for like 40 kilometers in the desert, man. Like, no problem. So stealth is a thing of the past. You don't worry about stealth when you're dealing with that robot, let me tell you. It is just a bad scene. Now, the other thing, though, that I noticed, which they have, which looks surprisingly similar to the robots they used in the movie The Black Hole, is the MAV, the micro-air vehicle. Now, this is really what the story is all about for me. Originally developed for the Army's Future Combat System, the FCS program, the backpack portable, fully autonomous fully autonomous micro-air vehicle might end up seeing initial deployment with the Navy. The robot itself isn't news. It's been flight tested by troops stationed in Hawaii. It has been a starring role in the Army's action-packed video game derivative promo videos. But the Navy ordered 20 of these bots for possible use by explosive ordnance disposal personnel. This means 16-pound UAV closer to full deployment. What's interesting about the MAV? What's interesting about the MAV is it takes off and lands and hovers like a chopper, but is actually much simpler to operate. This is because it is propelled by a single fixed-pitch ducted fan which steers steered with radial fans. It's like a plane engine, says program manager Daniel Newman. And when it's hovering, its gust response is more benign since it doesn't have a big rotary blade acting like it's a wing. It takes zero piloting skills to operate the MAV, so it's not really autonomous. There is a pilot who operates it. Using a ground station, a hardened laptop, it's a hardened laptop, so it's a Panasonic Toughbook, you give it up to 100 waypoints per mission. It figures out how to proceed. If it loses link with the ground station as it rounds a mountain, it will continue on its destination to a preset location to reestablish contact. So it has actually got a degree of autonomousness to this item. Operators can give it simple commands such as ascending or descending, or give it a quickly swapped over to another ground station. The point of the MAV is an idiot-proof aerial reconnaissance. It takes off and lands without launch or recovery equipment, can monitor a 10-kilometer radius with area infrared or visible cameras, or in a hover and stare mode, is also enough to hover as low as 5 feet above the surface and scout out possible improvised explosive devices. Did we mention it fits in a backpack? Not sure why, but that certainly sounds exciting. Well, the thing is with this device, weighs 16 pounds and is able to, you know, kind of move along at a pretty good pitch there. And I think, you know, hey, it's a pretty neat design and everything. Again, all you got to do is swing by my live journal, look at the post I put up there a few days ago where a guy mounted a shotgun on a remote control helicopter, and bada boom, bada bing, you've got yourself your very own hunter-killer drone. And since these things are so small, they weigh 16 pounds, how hard would it really be to put some of these comminative sprayers on there? Especially if they're going down. I mean, you have it fly 30 feet above the crowd. It's already got a fan pumping out all kinds of air. Just dump some comminatives into there, and you can spray the crowds. And the cops, you know, pretty much can put on their coveralls and just, you know, lug these poor, unfortunate people off to the concentration camps because they're all stoned. And boy, what a coming down that's going to be, huh? You know, you're feeling pretty good, and then you wake up and suddenly you're in Dachau. Not so good. Not so good. The day is definitely taking a turn for the worse. But it gets better. It gets better. There's also the OAV, the Organic Air Vehicle. I don't know why the hell they called it this. This pumped-up version of the MAV is designed to go further and longer to designate ground targets from the sky. Talk about watching the skies. Not quite death from above, but close. Well, yeah, it is death from above. If the thing's lazing you and trying to kill you, guess what? Death from above. The 65-inch tall Organic Air Vehicle can hover for up to 2 hours, painting targets up to 15 clicks away with a laser designator. Its initial flight tests have been proven successful, and a fully loaded production model should be in the air by the end of next year. Like the MAV, a 112-pound OAV is completely autonomous with no launch or recovery gear. The autonomous collision avoidance capabilities and single-ducted fan for propulsion is a creepy ability to land, scan its surrounding for hours, and then take off again. It is because of a powered 42-horsepower heavy-fuel engine. Should be incredibly easy to refuel. Most ground vehicles use the same JP-8 fuel as the OAV. Unlike the MAV, the OAV has wings, which are not quite fixed. They pivot back and forth, providing some lift during the forward movement. But as program manager Daniel Newman put it, they get out of the way of the gusts when it's hovering. And along with peeking at suspicious roadside objects, it can designate them for destruction by another unit like one of the MAVs. Because, you know, we're going to have lots of flying little hovering robots that fly around and destroy stuff. Because you notice how there's a billion uses for this. There's like 10 billion. There's uses for this that I haven't even thought of yet. I mean, you sitting there listening to this right now are able to come up with about like 5 or 10 uses for these hovering platforms that are totally autonomous robots. But what are they talking about? They're talking about IEDs. Improvised explosives. That's what this is for. No, this is not what it's for. This is what they're going to deploy them for so that we okay this kind of psychotic technology, you know. Don't get me wrong. I like robots. I may make it available to the civilian market. I'm okay with that. Well, eventually it will be. I mean, anybody can tinker and make this stuff. You look at the pictures of these things. They wouldn't be hard to build. They're a very basic concept. It's simple. It works. You know, that's what's going on. But you know, it's like that thing I was saying. It's like having the show that's, you know, super slick produced and you got like the echo effects and it looks like it came from Fox. And then you've got, you know, the superior quality of this show. And you realize that, you know, somebody's telling the truth. And it's not the Fox guys. So when you see stuff like this where it's quite obvious they're pointing you at the UAVs, I don't know, you sort of sit back and it kind of makes me go, well, I don't really trust what these people are saying. And I don't really trust the usage of this. And this is why I pass this information on. So next time you're out and about in your local neighborhood and you see one of these hovering things flying overhead, starting to spray stuff, you can go, oh, hey, honey, gas, 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 and the two of you can get the hell out of there. Now, getting back to other Spider-Man type stuff, this is pretty cool because I'd like to get one of these. The Cyberpunk Kit Powered Rope Ascender. This is very neat. The Atlas is produced by Atlas. Follow the link on the live journal. I'll take you there. The Atlas Powered Rope Ascender, pulling soldiers' mobility into the third dimension. I love it when they say shit like that. You know, it's like... It pulling soldier mobility into the third dimension. Yeah, I want the stuff that pulls a soldier mobility into the ninth dimension. I want soldiers traveling back and forth through time and shit. I want quantum ascenders. That's what I want. Yeah, math hair guy. You know, you want to redefine everything. You got anything? Give me the wristwatch. Give me a TARDIS. You give me a TARDIS, I will extol the virtues of quantum mechanics. Until I get a TARDIS, you know, go eat a bag of dicks. The Rope Ascender, created by the Atlas device, is a powerful new tool that enables reverse rappelling. It's not climbing, it's reverse rappelling. Up buildings and other vertical surfaces at unprecedented speeds. No one has ever moved at 10 feet per second before. It's unprecedented. Using the Atlas's patented, it's important to remember that this is patented, patented rope interaction design. I love this. The buzzwords are flying fast and furious. The lightweight Rope Ascender could pull a fully loaded soldier. Fully loaded, because there's only one weight for a fully loaded soldier. Upper rappelling line at 10 feet per second, as well as tow vehicles at even remotely equipment and casualties. Even remotely move equipment and casualties. Okay, saying that a pulley with an engine on it can remotely move a casualty is a bit of a stretch, okay? Because somebody's going to have to hook that rope to the casualty, okay? I suppose, technically speaking, you hit the button, the rope goes whirr, and you drag Buddy off of the battlefield with his shoulders hooking on things and kind of like flailing and getting stitched by everybody and their dog as he's drawn across, you know, whirr, ta-ding! And you've got, you know, this bloody piece of web gear on the end of the hook by the time it actually, oh shit, he didn't make it! You know, oh wait! They did have that before. This isn't unprecedented. They use them with the Air Force, with the search and rescue guys. You know, the guys, they lower the thing down to you, and then they hit the button, and it raises you out of the water, and they take you onto the chopper, and you fly away with, you know, the guy from Waterworld. Yeah, same thing. With the capability to reach a top of a building or a cliff in only seconds, new advantages were gained by urban warfare, rescue operations, and beyond. And beyond what? And beyond. Beyond. It's beyond. Fuck. I'd love to get a hold of these guys who write these, you know, seriously, just if you want to make a decent ad for the thing, just bring it on by, you know. I'm not hard to find. I'll throw it on patrolling. I'll give you a no-shit account for it. But don't tell me this is going to be, you know, new advantages that are gained in urban warfare, rescue operations, and beyond. Like, beyond what? You know, the astronauts are going to be using this thing to scale giant monoliths they found on alien planets? Like, fuck off. In Lethal Weapons news... Now, this is some interesting shit. I haven't heard about this. Whenever new weapons roll out, everyone's all talking about non-lethal. Hey, we made stuff that doesn't kill people. Isn't that cool? We can use them on your kids. And we often do. Think about how many taser strikes we've put on children lately. I mean, really, within the last year. How many times have you heard of tasers being used on kids? At least twice you can think of, right? Because I know, because I reported on two times on the show. So, how many of these other... If they're using tasers... Which, in the land of less than lethal, they are pretty beefy, okay? I mean, you know, pumping voltage through somebody, hey, it turns you off, okay? If they're using tasers on kids, what other less lethal weapons will they be using on kids? But we're not talking about less than lethal. No, no, no. Spradicky sent in this piece on lethal weapons. Good old-fashioned blow-you-to-bits guns. And apparently, these potentially lethal weapons didn't get the clearance from Parliament. A new super weapon, this is from Britain, is being supplied to British soldiers in Afghanistan, employs a technology based on thermobaric principles, which uses heat and pressure to kill people targeted across a wide area by sucking the air out of their lungs and rupturing internal organs. This is like a fuel air explosive. So essentially what it does is it's like, hi, you're in a cave. Okay, I'm going to fire this weapon in. The weapon goes in, sprays like some kind of a mist. The mist then ignites after it is sprayed, burning up all of the oxygen that exists within the caves, thereby creating a vacuum and pulling your organs outside of your body. It basically turns you inside out. These so-called enhanced blast weapons use similar technology used by the bunker-busting bombs and devastating bombs dropped by the Russians to destroy the Chechen capital of Grozny. You know, I didn't know that the Russians bombed Grozny, but I guess this is the same sort of stuff they use. The Chechens, by the way, are pretty pissed off about that. I should mention they're not really super happy. The Chetniks, they sort of take that stuff very seriously. Such weapons are brutally effective because they first disperse a gas chemical agent, which is lit at a second stage, allowing the blast to fill the spaces of the building and the crevices or the cave. When the U.S. military developed a version of the weapons in 2005, Defense Tract wrote an article about it. The Marines quiet about brutal new weapon. According to the U.S. Defense Intelligence Agency, which released a study on the thermobaric weapons in 1993, the blast kill mechanism, against living targets is unique and unpleasant. Okay, when in the report they refer to it as unpleasant, you know this is some sick-ass shit. What kills is the pressure wave, and more importantly, the subsequent rarefaction vacuum, which ruptures the lungs. If the fuel deflagrates but does not detonate, the victim will be severely burned and will probably also inhale burning fuel. The most common FAE fuels are ethylene oxide and propylene oxide are highly toxinated. Undetonated FAEs should prove as lethal as personnel caught within the cloud of the most chemical agents. Oh, good. Good. So what we have is we have an explosive. We can blow you up, we can chem weapon you, and we can kill you with fire. So it's like flaming chemical weapon napalm nitro. A second DIA study said shock and pressure waves cause minimal damage to brain tissue. What about the rest of you? Yeah, your brain is fine. The rest of you is inside out. It is possible that the victims of FAEs are not rendered unconscious by the blast, but instead suffer for several seconds or minutes while they suffocate. Now, there was this document, you know, that came out a while ago after the Second World War. It was called the Geneva Convention. Now, nobody really listens to the Geneva Convention because, you know, it's war and nobody likes war. We don't like rules and war. It's kind of annoying. Nobody really likes it. But, you know, in that document, you're apparently not supposed to use soft slug weapons like shotguns and like weapons that, you know, make messy holes in people because they're soft slug and it's expansive bullets. That's why all the bullets are supposed to have full metal jackets on them, okay? That's what. Mind you, that was before 9/11. You know, that was before 9/11. The Nazis, Holocaust, yeah, that was prior to 9/11. 3,000 people died in 9/11, don't you know? 3,000 people, horribly, horribly burned. Crushed, destroyed, absolutely horrific. That, and a bunch of guys in caves did that. You know, they flew the planes into the buildings and they collapsed perfectly straight down. I mean, they're smart about it. They dropped three buildings with two planes. Not bad. You know, I mean, don't mess with these Afghan guys, man. Today they're trading camels. Tomorrow they're flying state-of-the-art planes into buildings, which I can't do myself, even though, you know, I've probably got more training than they do. But hey, you know, that was prior to 9/11, that stupid, you know, who listens to the Geneva Convention anyway? And I'm sure that if we checked this weapon against the Geneva Convention, it would totally be okay. It would totally be okay. You know, no problem. We'd be able to, you know, have that. No problem. You know, so they're terrorists. They don't feel pain like you or I do. You know, and it's very selective. It doesn't just kill everything in an area. Well, yeah, but I mean, if they're in the area with terrorists, they're terrorism people. You know, there was a comedian one time. He said something on TV, which I thought was great. He's like, you know, the whole thing with fighting in Iraq over there, you know, I can pretty much prove that we're pretty much just occupying that country. Because can you tell me the uniform of the enemy, please? You know, I'll wait. Seriously. We don't even know who the hell we're fighting over there. I mean, you know, how easy is it to just dust teenagers, kids, everybody? Because there's like people don't live that long over there. You know, I mean, it's you're over there fighting essentially an alien culture and you're slaughtering everything you get your hands on. And now you're dropping vacuum FAE explosives and, like, hand launch. Like, guys, dude, okay, the question is not whether or not you can actually pacify these people and subjugate them to your will. Okay, and if they choose not to be subjugated, which, believe me, you're never going to subjugate the Afghans. The Russians tried, okay, and they really tried. Okay, and they didn't have any of these annoying laws, you know, to hold them back. They just, you know, they're over there going wholesale. So I think the idea there is to try to create some sort of an idea to GFO. Either GFO or create some sort of a method where we don't have to fight these people, because there's a problem, okay? If you have to deploy weapons like this that are turning people inside out, you are definitely, you know, when they find they're dead and everything, man, you know, you're not going to be... The ramifications of this are huge. We're not making things better, okay? I'm sorry. Weapons like this do not make things better. Are they effective? Yes. Is there a role for these weapons? Yes, there is. But, guys, you know, I could see Spec Ops using this, insertion teams using stuff like this, but having this handed out willy-nilly to frontline troops who are just using it on, you know, schools and shit, I mean, I don't know if they're using it on schools. I can't really make that call. But it seems kind of, well, it seems like at the very least it probably goes against the Geneva Convention, you know? So if we're going to just say fuck the Geneva Convention, then at least come out and say that so that everybody's on the same page, you know? Anyway, in horror news, if that wasn't horrible enough for you, I'm going to really hit you with a downer here. Now, this is what's great. You know, people are talking about, well, we're improving the world. Well, some people with HIV and AIDS in Papua New Guinea are being buried alive by their relatives, okay? They're starting to bury people alive in these third world countries. Margaret Maribe said families were taking the extreme action because they could no longer look after the sufferers or feared catching the disease themselves. How 28 days later is that? Maribe said she saw the live burials with her own eyes during their five-month trip to the people of Papua New Guinea's remote southern highlands. Papua New Guinea is in the grip of an HIV/AIDS epidemic, the worst in the region. As a matter of fact, everywhere where there's kind of like black and brown people is pretty, that's not dominated by religion, okay, that's not dominated by the whole like, you can't have sex until marriage thing, so that's how they control that. Everywhere else is pretty much swamped by AIDS. We're pretty much wiping out the brown people as quickly as we can, you know, infect them with AIDS, which, I don't care what anybody says, is a man-made disease. You know, I mean, wow, you live a white Christian upper class lifestyle, you're immune. You are immune. Oh, suck dick for drug money, you're taking the keister. Oh, you get to die. That's why they got t-shirts in the States that say, thank God for AIDS. Officials estimate that 2% of 6 million population is infected, but campaigners believe the figure is much higher. Well, I would say so. Because in these small communities, like in Papua New Guinea, okay, being a grandparent, it's not like here, where, you know, if you're old, they kind of throw you in a wheelchair, lock you in some institution somewhere until you fucking die, and they can bleed you for all your, you know, pension money or whatever. No, actually, old people have value in these cultures. So for them to take you and to bury you alive, okay, someone who has spent their entire life with you, and they bury you alive, oh, my God, the emotional mushroom cloud from that is so unbelievably, it's unfathomable to consider these tightly knit, community-driven people to bury the people, members of their family, and to bury them alive. And I'll bet you the people who are being buried alive didn't resist. You know, it's brutal. She goes on to say, it's a quote here, I saw three people with my own eyes. They got very sick and the people could not look after them, so they buried them. She described how one person called out, Mama, Mama, as the soil was being shoveled over their head. Villagers told her that such an action was common. HIV and AIDS is mostly spread through the country through heterosexual intercourse and polygamy. Rape and sexual violence are widespread. Those caught up in the epidemic are often thought to be victims of witchcraft because, you know, that's what mud hut culture does for ya. Yes, it's witchcraft. You know, and people wonder why I have a problem with religion. And as we all know, the Christians say, and everybody else says, you can't have witches. They're bad, right? Thou shalt not tolerate the presence of a witch. Oh, Sean, that's Old Testament. Oh, sorry. Sorry, I'll get the revised version. Women accused of being witches have been tortured and murdered by mobs, holding them responsible for the epidemic. Oh, shit. According to officials, yeah, that's where I'd want to be. Grabbed by a mob of Papua New Guinea natives who think I'm a witch and made them bury their relatives alive. What do you want to bet that checkout process is not going to be, shall we say, seamless? Your daily hack today is a chart for the war room, which was sent to me by Sporadic E. This is about the globalincidentmap.com. This is a hilarious site. I love this one. This is a free public service website created to give the public, law enforcement, and military, and government individuals a new way to visualize and become instantly aware of terrorism and security across the world. Every time, this is great. While the website employs much automation, the news gathering itself is not automated. News items are located, reviewed, and manually entered into the database. This is like Slashdot for bombs going off. It's great. Anytime that there's any kind of terror suspect or list or whatever, they put it up there on like this Frapper program, and you could like zone in to see what's happening in your neighborhood. You know, and next time the wife gives you any crap whatsoever for buying a shotgun, no problem, honey, I've got it nailed, because hey, I've got the look how close it is. It's everywhere. And that's all I got for you today, but don't worry, I'll be back next week to make sure you get the news you need to survive. This has been a free podcast brought to you by the Wogs Who Care. And if you can donate, great. Give me money. But if you can't donate, distribute. Give the show to other people. But if you can give me money, please do so by going to the Dark Atlas website. Click on the Donate tab in the top right, a hot link, or send an envelope to Rant Media Studios. Box 18121, 1215C. That's only 1215C, not like six of them. 56th Street, Delta, BC, Canada, V4M2M4. And I want to thank the Army of Flying Monkeys for their assistance in gathering data. If you have information you would like to send me, you can reach me at newsreel, N-E-W-S-R-E-A-L, at rantradio.com. If you like the music in the background, make sure you check out more Goa Psytrance music. I'm really becoming a big fan. I'm going to fade out with a track, really good song, from the album Dancing Galaxy by a group called Astral Projection. So the group is Astral Projection. The album is Dancing Galaxy. The song is Ambient Galaxy. So song Ambient Galaxy, album is Dancing Galaxy, and the band is Astral Projection. Okay, you got that? All right, because believe me, I had to write this down like four times to figure it out. Remember, everyone, we will never defeat the enemy if we are at each other's throats. So until next time, that's what Server said. End of line.
The spice extends life. The spice expands consciousness. The spice is vital to space travel. You know,